This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with one of the candidates in the 2014 U.S. Senate race involving Mary Landrieu, the U.S. Senator, Democrat from New Orleans, will be seeking a fourth term with lots of company on the ballot. Not only Bill Cassidy, the congressman from Baton Rouge, but another Republican, a Tea Party GOP stalwart, Colonel Rob Manis. He's in the race. John McGinnis says this could almost ensure a runoff between the incumbent and one of the challengers. And there may be others in the offing as well as we approach next year. And we'll talk about it with Rob Manis. Also, David Meyer, his biography, The Bee Gees, the group that sold over 250 million records in a 40-year span. We'll talk with David Meyer. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Our guest at this time is Rob Manis. Colonel Manis is a resident of Madisonville, a Republican, a member of the Tea Party, and seeking to become a U.S. Senator from the great state of Louisiana. Good morning, Colonel Manis.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Thanks for having us on. It's a great day here in Madisonville.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and why are you running?
Well, I'm running because I'm concerned about our country, and America's in crisis right now. We see it every day. Our liberties are being encroached on with every different alphabet agency you can think of, the IRS, the NSA. And I've been in defense, the defense industry as a military person for most of my life and grew up in it. I was born into a military family. But even I am appalled at what I hear of some of the revelations coming out of the NSA, and I'm definitely appalled at the use of the Internal Revenue Service to put a chilling effect on conservative viewpoints, because it could just be changed to the other side too, you know, if somebody else was in power. So those are very big concerns for us. I've had to ask people to risk their lives for the Constitution of the United States and the principles that bind it and that created our country, America, that we all love. And I took that same oath and had to risk my life for those principles, too. And I just can't stand idly by and watch people compromise on those principles while saying they're trying to get things done.
When you were 17 years old, you enlisted in the Air Force. Was that right out of high school?
That's correct. That was right out of high school. About 2 weeks after I graduated from high school is when I went on active duty.
Graduate of the University of Tampa with master's degrees from Harvard University's Kennedy School and the Air Command and Staff College, as well as a U.S. College of Naval Warfare. So Rob Manis comes as a well-educated candidate. How did you end up in Louisiana?
Well, we've lived here almost 9.5 years total now. I was stationed here twice in my military career, both times up in Bossier City at Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana. First came here in 1987 and stayed until late 1992, owned a home up there in South Bossier. And then we returned in 2009 to help create the Air Force's new nuclear command, the Global Strike Command, that's up at Barksdale now. And was there for almost a year before I got asked to go be a wing commander out of Kirtland Air Force Base, New Mexico. And we did that for about 16 months. My wife was diagnosed with breast cancer about 16 months into our assignment, and we chose to go ahead and start her treatment there, and needed to get out and get her to a place where she could get the proper medical care for her entire treatment. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to come back to Louisiana, fortunately, and go to work for Entergy, the utility company, who I've been working for the last 2 years. We were able to get her get moved in here to Madisonville, in a beautiful neighborhood, a great small community. And I've been working downtown in New Orleans for the last 2 years at the Entergy headquarters building. And then I cover all the state as a director of safety and technical training for them. I just had to resign from that job last week. my request for a unpaid long-term leave of absence was not approved by them, unfortunately. So now I'm a full-time candidate for the United States Senate against Mary Landrieu.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works as well. The guest is Colonel Rob Manis of Madisonville. He's lived in Louisiana for about a decade, and he is trying to unseat U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu. You have been described as a, quote, Tea Party Republican. Is that something you embrace?
I am a member of the Greater New Orleans Tea Party group, and I do have some Tea Party backing, but I have been a Republican since I first voted in my first presidential election at the age of 18 for Ronald Reagan, and have been a Republican ever since, and have never voted any other way. So I consider myself a constitutional conservative Republican. And really, in my mind, and I think in the mind of a lot of conservatives, the most true conservative Republican in this race right now.
What makes you more conservative than, say, Congressman Cassidy?
Well, let's just say what Eric Erickson said over the weekend, at the Red State gathering. I think a lot of people saw the article out of NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune in there. And where I stand on life, for instance, is believe in the right to life, because it's a basic natural and creator's right that frames our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. And I also happen to believe that life begins at conception, and I have no qualms about saying that. I also believe in traditional or natural marriage, because it's also framed in natural law that is used to bind our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. I stand for a strong national defense, but I don't think the defense budget is sacrosanct either, and there's a lot of room to make good decisions and ensure we continue to have a strong national defense, but make sure we're spending the right dollars on the right things, especially as we move into the future and need to make some strategic decisions on what type of military we have and what our strategy is going into the future.
I thought, Colonel, that Congressman Cassidy was in concurrence with you on these issues. I don't know of anything you've said that he would disagree with. Do you have a response?
I don't know that he completely disagrees with me on those things, but I haven't seen his positions on things like the right to life and traditional marriage. I have heard him speak about the Second Amendment and his thoughts that there may be room for more improved background checks. I don't believe that we need any more legislation to infringe on the Second Amendment. I believe that
why would background checks be an infringement on the Second Amendment?
I believe we have enough federal laws that require us to do that. I just bought a new gun myself not too long ago and went through a background check that worked just fine. And there's no reason for us to implement more federal laws when we don't need to. Congressman Cassidy has not taken a position on defunding Obamacare. I have. I have signed the petition and also have signed the pledge with the Senate Conservative Fund. Has on their website, don't fund Obamacare, and I would not be one to vote to repeal the act 37 or 39 times, whatever the number is now, and then vote to fund it. And I believe if you check the congressman's voting record, he would have, I believe he voted for that. I also believe Congressman Cassidy just voted for the original NDAA Act that enacted the NSA phone data collection act that supposedly improved the Patriot Act, and I stand against that. Although the Patriot Act was necessary at the time, I was in the Pentagon on 9/11 and helped plan the war and have worked within the war zone myself. And had to ask people to do that. I also believe that we've gone too far with the current intelligence collection on the American people.
297-5633, your number for Colonel Rob Manis. Let's take some inquiries for the colonel, who is a candidate for the U.S. Senate. Bruce in Walden. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, hello, Jim and Colonel. Yeah, I just wanted to applaud your criticism of the NSA. I'm wondering if you, as assertively support Edward Snowden's critical whistleblowing in this matter. Thanks.
If I heard the question correctly, I will just say that I worked in the intelligence community in my Air Force career, and I understand the rules of engagement on those types of activities, and I was appalled at the revelations.
Well, do you think Snowden did the right thing?
I believe that the revelations that were brought to light were necessary to be brought to light, but the Mr. Snowden's made some decisions that he's going to have to face at some point with our judicial system, more than likely, and we'll have to see how that plays out.
But should he be charged if he did something that you believe is good?
Again, we need to look at what he signed up for and what supposed allegations are against him, as to what the specifics are, to see what that plays, how that plays out.
Well, I gather you're kind of caught in the middle on this. You think he exposed something that needed to be exposed, but on the other hand, as a military veteran, a colonel in the Air Force, you're of the mind that he broke the law.
No, that's not what I said. You said that I was of the mind that he broke the law, but perhaps he did, and we need to look at the facts and see how that plays out and see how whether he should be charged or not. And I don't have all the facts, just as I was when I was a court-martial commuting authority.
Right.
I always wanted to make sure I had all the facts before I passed judgment on an individual. But I do think that the information that was revealed showed that we had gone too far.
And we wouldn't have known about it if it were not for Edward Snowden.
That's perhaps true. There may have been others, though.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
297-5633 for Colonel Rob Manis, who lives in Madisonville. It's interesting. You say you lost your job because of this race. Is that right?
That's correct. When we made the commitment back in the middle of May of this year and made the announcement.
So how will you make how will you make a living over the next year and a few months?
Well, my wife's a professional in her own right, and I have my military retirement, and that's enough for us to get by. And we own a small piece of land that's farmed under contract, and it doesn't make very much profit, a few $100 a year. Some years, and last year wasn't very great at all with the drought and everything, but we have enough income to withstand.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you said you're in favor, Colonel, of traditional marriage. I'm trying not to put words in your mouth, but I would think that might mean you're against same-sex marriage.
Same-sex marriage is a matter for the states, and being in this great state of Louisiana, I totally agree with what's written in the Constitution and how the state has handled that.
So you're not a proponent of same-sex marriage?
I am a proponent of traditional natural marriage, and I believe that that's the right way that marriage should be defined.
All right, 297-5633. Senator Landrieu, let's start with the social issues. What do you find fault with regarding her record on social issues?
Well, I think if you just see what's been going on in the media over the last few weeks with the bill that was passed in Texas, it appears that she couldn't make up her mind. I have concerns about that. I have a grandson that was born at only 28 weeks and 2 pounds, 5 ounces last year myself. And it's hard for me to understand why that would be a difficult decision to make. To not take care of the unborn in such a way. The Planned Parenthood has one of the largest, if not the largest, abortion clinics being planned here in New Orleans. That's west of the Mississippi, and a lot of the social conservative groups are fighting that.
We'll be back with Rob Manis after this timeout. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Colonel Rob Manis is with us. Next year, he will be running for the United States Senate, trying to unseat three-term incumbent Mary Landrieu of New Orleans. Also in the race is Congressman Bill Cassidy from Baton Rouge. And Rob Manis, who is from Madisonville. Ironically, all three candidates were not born in the state of Louisiana. Where were you born, Colonel Manis?
I was born at Madigan Army Hospital in between McCord Air Force Base and Fort Lewis Army installation in Washington State.
All
my
right,
dad was a U.S. Air Force enlisted guy.
So you were born in Washington. Mary Landrieu was born in Virginia. Bill Cassidy was born in Illinois, and we should have quite a trio running for the U.S. Senate. I would imagine you would invite debates. You probably want as many of them as you can participate in.
Absolutely. I'll debate anybody, anywhere on my views on constitutional principle and how we need a more limited government and how every time we stray from the limited government that's described in the frame of the Constitution, we end up in situations like we are with our various bureaucracies being overly complex, out of control, and with folks actually saying publicly that they're not following laws and those kinds of things. Once our society goes down that route, if we don't pull it back very quickly, we will face many, many more challenges and not be the America that we all want our grandchildren to have.
Jeff on River Road. Jeff, you're on the air with Colonel Rob Manis. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jim. Jim, actually, I just wanted to thank you for having on different points of view. I know sometimes you don't agree with all the speakers that come before you, but your civility and the way that you treat your guests and the fact that this is a very conservative person on your show, I just want to say thank you and God bless you for doing it, and you're doing a good job.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Colonel Manis. Hi, Dan.
Yes, Colonel. If Louisiana is allowed to prohibit abortion, should we increase taxes in order to pay for the education and health care of these children whose parents cannot afford to do so?
What about raising taxes to help the poor, and those would include, I'm sure, children who were born to parents in poverty? Have any thoughts, Colonel?
I take exception to the question of raising taxes as it is. You take a look at the numbers and see what we collect in the United States and in the state, and I think it would boggle your mind. It's in the over trillions and trillions of dollars of revenue, and I don't have any reason for raising taxes. But when you look at the numbers of children that have died since Roe v. Wade has become the law of the land, those numbers, and I think it's over 55 million now, are the numbers that I'm most concerned about. And there won't be a need to raise taxes to further educate those children. And we need to get the federal government out of the education system in the first place. We rank number 19, I think, in the world in our graduates' performance, and so it's not working, what we are doing at the federal level, and we need to make sure that the control is at the state and local level, parents' level, really, for our education system.
297-5633 is your number, and we will take some inquiries coming in at Inkstershow at WRKF.org as well for Colonel Rob Manis, who's getting in the arena in a different way. There have, of course, been military people through the years of our country who have been successful in politics, but not as many as there used to be. Why do you think that's the case? Why don't we have more people who wore the uniform of the United States Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy? Why don't we have more of them running for office now? Any reason, Colonel?
Well, it's a difficult decision to make. Most of us are not independently wealthy. Very few folks come out of their military service with the ability to face a challenge like that. I've just been very fortunate been around the right people and have the right folks praying for us to be able to do this. I think that many military folks, we spend our lives being neutral. You know, as a professional officer, you are taught, you and enlisted also, you take an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. That is not the government. That is not a president. That is not a congressman. It's the principles in the document.
Ann Downtown. Ann, good morning. You're on the air with Colonel Rob Manis.
Yes, thank you. First, Colonel Manis, I'd like to thank you for your service. My father was also a retired Air Force pilot, so I do thank you for your service. I have an important question that I never hear Republicans actually answer, so I'd like to get a straight answer on what are the top one or two things that you would do to help the people in poverty in Louisiana? And I'll take my answer off the air.
What about helping people get out of poverty? How do we do that? We've got a lot of poor people in our state.
I agree. We do. As a matter of fact, there's a neighborhood that that lives in the very shadow of the richest corporations in the world in our state, not far from where Ann is at, if I understand where she's at correctly. But the answer is not big government programs. You know, I was about 5 years old when the war on poverty started under President Lyndon Johnson, and it's continuing. Those big government programs are continuing today, and our poverty numbers in this country are greater than they've ever been. So the answer is not big government programs. What the answer is, from the folks that I talk to, and I've been all around the state now, I finished up my first statewide tour going to all the major cities and areas that we could get to about a week and a half ago up in Shreveport, Bossier. But when I talk to folks that are small business owners, that are leaders in the communities, there's three things that we need to work on. First is we need a return to what one of the things that made the men and women that made America as great as it is individual responsibility. You know, we've got to teach our children to be responsible. You know, we talk a lot about the natural rights of liberties in natural and creator's law that our framework, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence was based on. But we rarely talk about the individual's responsibilities that are documented that go along with those rights and liberties when you go back and actually study the history that the founders studied. As they framed our founding documents and concepts. So we need to do that. The second thing is, you know, take those individuals that step up and take responsibility and work with them to strengthen their communities, because it's at the community level with individuals that are taking personal responsibility and working with small businessmen and private enterprise in those communities. That's the third piece, is private enterprise.
Robert in Park Haven. Robert, you're on the air with Colonel Manis. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Jim. How you doing, Colonel? My concern with voting for any Republican today is it's very apparent that they are pro-Republican first, and middle-class America has taken a back seat to just about every one of their policies. Ronald Reagan probably wouldn't even be allowed to be a Republican and probably couldn't win a primary in the Republican Party today. And I know that you said the first man you voted for president was President Reagan. So what's your opinion on the obstructionism that they're dealing to the rest of us?
Well, thanks, Robert. I appreciate it. The obstructionism, to get at that point first, there are some things that our founding documents, our Constitution, it's designed to make things go slow, and the Senate is part of that. But on the other hand, though, I think you're right. I am not a Republican first. I'm an American first, and that's why I'm running. That's why I talk about the Constitution and the framers and the limited government that they intended us to have, that's bound up in that natural and creator's law, the because without that, we're not the United States of America, that people even break laws to get to and even break up their families to come to try to become citizens. We must not be party first. We must be Americans first.
Kevin in Winsboro. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air with Colonel Manis. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, sir. I would like to say, as a United States Marine, that I really respect Colonel Manis' service. And, Colonel Manis, sir, I have a question for you. Would you be willing to stand with Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and these other great senators who are against sending foreign aid to countries that burn our flag?
Did you hear his question, Colonel?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Kevin, and thank you for your service. We appreciate all of our servicemen and women. My two oldest sons are both in the military, one in the Army Guard and active duty sailor. And my oldest son just got back from his second deployment this year a few weeks ago. So I appreciate your service. Absolutely. I stand with Rand Paul and Ted Cruz to ensure that we're following the law. And in the case of countries like Egypt, with the incident that just occurred over there, we should have stopped foreign military sales and aid, or at least put them on pause until we saw how the initial change in government was going to work out. But we definitely have to follow the law when a military coup occurs and we're sending foreign military sales aid to a country like that. Even if we may agree with them, we still must follow our laws. We can't pick and choose which laws we're going to follow. And the law says we should have stopped that flow of aid, and I believe we eventually did. But I would have demanded it, just like Senator Paul and Senator Cruz did.
My guess is that you're not a fan of the President of the United States.
That's a good question. I am not a fan of his policies. I think that he is, just like all other public servants, are trying to stick to his principles. I just greatly disagree with his principles because they are crossing the line and violating the principles in the United States Constitution. I don't think I agreed with some of the things that were going on in the previous administration either. The Patriot Act, we'll go back to that, was a necessary piece of legislation based on the attacks on our country at the time of 9/11. But as we move through time and we're defeating that enemy, we need to be reevaluating that because we had intentionally restricted our own citizens' rights and liberties. And the goal should have been to remove those restrictions as soon as possible, not fighting them.
What about the war in Iraq? Was that a prudent venture for the United States?
It's easy to use hindsight to look back on that. I think the way we left the country was definitely not prudent, and you can see what's happening there today as proof of that. I believe that President Bush could have made better decisions, and he might even tell you that himself. I can't speak for him, but I can speak that it was a tough series of decisions, and I saw all sides of the argument as I worked in the Pentagon, and I don't believe I would have made the same decision that he did.
Edwin asks, where were the Iraqi WMDs, and has no one been indicted for this? Why has no one been indicted for this monumental failure, writes Edwin.
I'm sorry, Jim, was that a question for me?
Yeah, they have a question for you from Edwin about the lack of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and I gather that Edwin is saying people should have been indicted for stating that we had to eradicate weapons of mass destruction, and as it turned out, according to President Bush, there were no WMDs.
Well, I think that's arguable, one. But two, you know, you go based on, you make your decisions based on the intelligence you have, the best intelligence you have. And unfortunately for that set of decisions, I don't believe we had the best intelligence that we could have had.
Here's a question from Delia.
That would be very difficult.
Delia, she asks, where does the good colonel stand on the lawsuit recently brought by the Southeast Louisiana Flood Control Authority against the oil industry for alleged damage done to the state's coastal wetlands?
I'm still saying that, and I don't have a position on that one at this time.
Okay, here's one from Silas. He says, most defenders of the Second Amendment as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court lists fear of a government takeover as the primary reason for the defense of gun rights. Given that the U.S. military is reasonably the only government agency capable of such a takeover, shouldn't Second Amendment defenders support a dramatic reduction in military spending? That from Silas.
That's a good question. But really, the Second Amendment was about having a healthy distrust of government, which is what our founders gave us as all Americans. And we should have a healthy distrust of government. As you can see, when bureaucracies are overly complex and have too much power, they can become out of control. And your liberties, whether it's the Second Amendment or the First Amendment or the Fourth Amendment or any of the rights listed in the Bill of Rights or the natural rights that don't need to be listed in our laws, can be infringed upon almost immediately. Mm-hmm. And we see that every day in our society now.
Kyle writes, considering that Senate Republicans, U.S. Senate Republicans, have had inability to pass many bills of late, what would you want to accomplish or what would you strive to accomplish as a freshman senator?
Well, the first thing I'd like to do is stand with folks like Cruz and Mike Lee, Senator Cruz and Senator Mike Lee and Senator Paul, and help them return our Senate to the framework that's in the Constitution. When you look at Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, the powers are enumerated there and responsibilities are enumerated there. And I've sat down with Senator Lee and Senator Cruz, and we've gone through those, and we agree on all of those. And I think that's the most important thing, so that we can begin to get ourselves back to a society that respects our rights and our individual liberties and is enabling of all Americans to realize their American dream.
Right.
And right now, we're enacting laws, and just like the what I call the Unaffordable Care Act, I think the Republicans call it Obamacare, maybe even the president does too at this point, but we're enacting the Unaffordable Care Act, and the most important part about that act that I'm against is how it is crushing small businesses already. Full-time jobs are becoming part-time jobs. Small business owners aren't taking the risk to project out over the next few years to try to build their business and create more jobs. And we all know that over 85% of the jobs created in this country are created by small businesses.
Right.
And that act is literally inhibiting them and causing them to make decisions that where folks are losing their jobs. And do we really need that when our unemployment is hovering at 8% because we've tried to use big government programs to reinvigorate our economy instead of setting free market policies that enable businesses to thrive?
297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. In just a bit, we'll hear from David Meyer. He has written a book about the Bee Gees, I'm sure one of Colonel Manis's favorite groups. And we will return with Colonel Rob Manis of Madisonville, candidate for the United States Senate, 51-year-old Air Force veteran who's a Tea Party Republican. Back with Colonel Rob Manis on WRKF after this 90-second pause on 89.3. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Colonel Rob Manis, candidate for the United States Senate. Scott in Denham Springs. Scott, you're on the air with the Colonel. Good morning.
Good morning, Colonel. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Livingston Parish, and we have periodically in the lower part of our parish flooding issues, as well as we deal with a lot of these insurance hikes for flood insurance throughout the whole parish. And it's getting to where it's pricing middle-income people out of their homes with these rising insurance rates. And I understand in reading a few things you said that you support the federal government raising those insurance rates. Can you explain and answer why you support that? Thank you.
Colonel?
I'm sorry, if I understood the question right, he said that he had read that I support the federal government raising insurance rates?
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I, just like everybody else here, pay for flood insurance, and I think that we as a government have a moral obligation to take care of the folks that we have forced into our government flood insurance program, and make sure that especially the folks that followed the new FEMA rules, and then the FEMA decided to change their rules, and then the act that was passed by Congress for this year to cause some of those insurance premiums to increase by as much as 25% a year, which I think is what Scott's referring to. I do not agree that we should not take care of those folks. We have a moral obligation as a nation to take care of them because we forced them into a national government flood insurance program. But the question I have is, what's on the backside of that after we take care of those folks, which I believe it's Congressman Cassidy and Senator Landrieu are arguing with each other over whose amendment or law, you know, new law gets credit for taking care of those folks. So.
All right, Don in Mid-City, we've got just a few minutes left with Colonel Manis. Please be brief. You're on with the Colonel. Hi, Don.
Hello, Colonel. How are you doing? I'm just interested. I've listened to some of your responses. What about Bayou Corn? This week, General Honoré has come out, and he went out to support the people. It's been 1 year since they've been out of their homes. And it seems that the legislature and the governor's office has been absent to those people. And I'd like to know what you would do and how you would respond to hazardous companies come.
All right. What about Bayou Corn? Thank you, Don. Colonel?
That's another great question. I want to go back to the flood insurance piece for a second, though. What's not being proposed is the free market concept and plans that we need to implement to get the government out of the flood insurance program so we don't have to continue to bail out a program that's already $30 billion in debt and has no end in sight every 5 to 10 years. I want to see that kind of plan put on the table so that folks, when they're making decisions in the future, not the folks that are living today, but the folks in the future making an appropriate risk decision. And that's what's not being put on the table by any politician, either in this state or in any of the other states that are affected by that program. And we need to focus on that, too, after we meet our moral obligation to take care of folks with their premiums that are about to rise. Now, to get back to the Bayou Corn issue, I really appreciate General Honoré for supporting the folks and the residents in Bayou Corn. It's an absolute tragedy. But government's not the solution. Government helping put pressure on the companies that should be taking care of that as quickly and rapidly and effectively as possible is the right way to go. Another government program won't help fix that. And we need to make sure that all of us are engaging with our representatives at the state level in the legislature. Call them every day if we need to, and make sure that they're putting the appropriate amount of pressure on there and helping General Honoré help out those folks. Sometimes I've seen over the last few weeks, especially as he seems to be the lone voice in the wilderness, trying to get those folks what they need and keep attention focused on that. And we all need to be calling our representatives and senators.
Okay. Well, Colonel, we thank you. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get to all the folks who wish to talk with you today, but hopefully we will have you back soon. I appreciate your time, and good luck on the campaign trail.
Well, thanks, Jim. You can go to www.robmanis.com. That's RobManess.com. Obviously, money is the one of the big challenges for a newcomer to the political arena, and we need your support. And look forward to the race to come.
Thank you, Colonel. Take care.
Thank you, Jim.
Bye. 297-5633 is your number. We're joined now by biographer David Meyer, who has written prolifically about musicians, and his latest biographical target, the Bee Gees. 250 million records over a 40-year career, and best known for the worldwide hit, top of the charts for 18 months, Saturday Night Fever, and this was the signature song of that album, 1977. Good morning, David Meyer.
Good morning.
You say the Bee Gees, despite their exceptional popularity, remain one of the most misunderstood acts of music history. Why so?
Well, I think that most people regard them as somehow synthetic, that maybe they made their music mostly with session musicians and the like, and don't recognize what great songwriters and musicians they were, and also don't recognize how much they were always a true band. And I also think people don't think much about the family struggles that went into making the Bee Gees music.
What kind of family struggles?
Well, you know, I think it's axiomatic that anybody who's been in a band for any length of time can't stand anybody else in the band. And then I think it's also axiomatic that if you're around your family all the time, they're going to get on your nerves. And here is a band that stayed together and family that stayed together for 40 years. So I think working with the same musicians and working with your family would drive almost anybody crazy, and it certainly seemed to.
The brothers who were the three members of the Bee Gees, Barry, Robin, and Maurice, they really had complementary talents, didn't they?
Yes, they began performing as children, and their harmonies came to them quite naturally. Robin was not much of a musician, but he had what everyone said was a producer's ear. You know, he knew how to make suggestions. He knew how to guide the songs. He was a gifted songwriter and a gifted singer, obviously. Morris, Robin's twin, was like Brian Jones in the Rolling Stones in that if he could touch it, he could play it. You know, he's a very gifted multi-instrumentalist and enabled them not to need a big band because he could play so many different instruments. And he was willing to take a back seat in the harmonies, and that helped a lot, too. Mm-hmm. And then Barry, of course, grew into a good rhythm guitarist, but was one of the great pop songwriters of all time and a great singer.
Well, the career of the Bee Gees was such that long before Saturday Night Fever, they had a substantial body of work, didn't they?
Yes, they sold 25 million records between 1967 and roughly 1971. You know, they had that hit New York Mining Disaster and Massachusetts and on and on and on, and were very well known, and then suddenly people lost interest in them, and they could hardly get arrested in the early 70s, and they began to work comeback album, moving away from their earlier ballad style toward R&B and dance music.
How did Saturday Night Fever evolve?
They were recording tracks, which they just thought would be their next record, at a studio in a chateau in France that was made famous by Elton John's Honky Chateau record, because he called the place the Honky Chateau. And they were recording there, and then suddenly their producer, Robert Stigwood, showed up with the script and informed them these songs would be for a movie and told them a little bit about the plot. And they changed the songs that they had somewhat, but not really very much.
What was your favorite song on that album?
Well, I'm cheating because they put Jive Talkin' on that record when it's really from Main Course. But
right.
Jive Talkin' is one of my favorite Bee Gees songs, and I just think it's a great song.
It was a number one, but several songs were top hits, and Staying Alive and Night Fever, they were at the top of the charts for, what, more than a month, each one of them, weren't they?
Yes, all the hits on Saturday Night Fever were on the charts long enough to make everyone sick of them. And they were on the charts. You know, two songs from that record went to number one, fell back to number two, and went back to number one, and that had never happened before.
Yeah, and Kevin points out How Deep Is Your Love. That was another monster hit from
another monster, and Yvonne Elliman had a hit off that record, you know, covering a Bee Gees song, and Tavares had a hit off that record. You know, that record was number one or in the top five for something like 27 months. It's just unheard of.
Mm-hmm. Here's another one from Saturday Night Fever, and it was at the top of the charts for well over a month in the early days of 1978.
Yeah.
Does it seem like 35 years, David Meyer?
You know, I think a lot of their music, Jive Talkin', for instance, doesn't seem identify with any era to me. You know, I think Jive Talkin' would be a number one tomorrow. Some of those cuts are so disco, you know, they evoke a very specific time and place. But the short answer to your question would be, no, it don't.
Well, they produced not only great music on their own, but were responsible for hits from, what, Barbra Streisand and Diana Ross, Kenny Rogers.
That's right. They were very successful. The three brothers and their producer, Albie Gallatin, were a great songwriting production team. And as you say, did number ones for Barbra Streisand, Dionne Warwick, Diana Ross, Kenny Rogers. And Barry wrote a lot of purpose-built number ones for other artists, too. Even when he was in his teens in Australia, he was writing hits for other artists.
They had trouble with drugs and alcohol.
Yes, they did. You know, if you're 17 years old and suddenly you're selling 25 million records, you're not going to tend toward moderation, clearly. And Maurice had terrible trouble with alcohol for much of his life and then got clean and sober later in life with the help of his wife and became fanatically devoted to paintball.
To what?
Paintball. He was a paintball fanatic.
My goodness.
And he opened a paintball store in Miami that's still there and had a nationally ranked paintball team. And Robin had issues with amphetamines.
Mm-hmm.
And he also got clean later in life with the help of his wife.
Here's your favorite song.
Thank you. So much.
The definitive biography of the Bee Gees from David Meyer, the group that dominated the charts in the late 1970s and actually were strong in the late 1960s and early 70s. They had quite a ride in 40 years on the music scene. And you also reflect on the brother who came later, Andy, the first artist to have his first three releases hit number one. He had his issues.
Yes, and all of those number ones were written by Barry. And like his brothers, Andy was a number one platinum artist before he was 20 years old. And Andy had a lot of self-esteem problems, and he took to cocaine like a duck to water and had issues with cocaine and with Quaaludes. He died at the age of 30. He didn't die of a drug overdose, but he died of a heart condition that is associated with heavy cocaine use. You know, the tabloids at the time said he had died of a drug overdose. He was actually clean when he died, but there's no doubt that his cocaine use contributed to his death. Mm-hmm.
He took to Victoria Principal, too.
Indeed. She was the great love of his life and the great obsession of his life. And, you know, his version is, she ruined me. Her version is, I told him to choose between drugs and me, and he chose drugs.
Well, they had a song that was a bit of a hit, kind of.
Yeah, a bit of an embarrassment, kind of, also.
But it was on the charts.
It was on the charts. A cover of Roy Orbison's Dreams.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, do you have that?
Oh, my goodness.
Not one of your favorites, David.
Is that not the most anemic thing you've ever heard? I mean, there's just nothing there.
Well, he was in love. His girlfriend wanted to sing, so...
Exactly. His girlfriend wanted to sing. Shades of Spinal Tap.
You know, they met, they were introduced by, John Davidson.
That's right. Met live. Andy sent her a little love note, and when she was on Dallas, you know, a tremendous star. And he was on the John Davidson show, and she walked out to surprise him, and the flame was lit.
She was 31, and he was 23, or something like that.
Yes, and she was, you know, a big star and very savvy in the ways of show business. She had been an agent, and he was, you know, something of a naif, you know, a naive kid. Well, an interesting dynamic, to say the least.
Yeah, and it lasted about a year, but she went on her way, and Andy was dead within about 6 years. But it's a great story about the Bee Gees, the biography from David Meyer. Thank you, David. Good to talk
with
you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for sharing your story about the Brothers Gibb.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Hope you have a great day. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.